The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
A new year, time for new growth. Grow your education and skills with Herzing University. Our online behavioral health programs fit your schedule and time. From an 8-month diploma program in health and human services to a 36-month bachelor's in psychology. Grow your behavioral health career with us wherever you are in your education. Your future starts now at Herzing University. Visit us online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109. Online at herzing.edu or text health to 85109.
Welcome back to the Paranorm Girl Podcast. I am your host, Kristen. Support for the Paranorm Girl Podcast is brought to you by Manscaped. The holidays came early this year. If you are still not sure what to get the man in your life, then look no further than our friends at Manscaped. The leading men's hygiene brand just launched new products that your man will actually use, including their new shower time favorite, the Body Buffer. It's time to give your man the gift of smooth balls. Is it not? Is it not, I ask you? And also, a good shower time experience this holiday season. Get free shipping and 20% off by going to manscaped.com and using PNG at checkout. Christmas has always seemed to come earlier and earlier every year. But this year, I think I am covered. I think so. The Performance Package 4.0 includes some really cool items. The Crop Preserver, the Crop Reviver, a pair of anti-chafing boxers, and a really nice travel case. We just used ours on a recent out-of-town trip, actually. The Performance Package also includes the Manscaped Signature Lawnmower 4.0. This electric trimmer has proprietary advanced skin-safe technology. It is also waterproof and can be used in the shower. Lee used the lawnmower the very first night it entered our house. Safe to say, he was excited about it. Our household is a lot less hairy, I gotta say. Like I said, it is waterproof. It helps reduce nicks, reduces the risk of ingrown hairs, and reduces the risk of grooming accidents. And it's pretty dang quiet, which any partner of a hairier partner can appreciate, I think. Nothing like trying to get some beauty rest and having your eyeballs torn wide open to what sounds like a power tool coming from your bathroom. So, 'tis the season by loading up on Manscaped products. Get your guy, your dad, your brother, your friends the best gift of all and hygiene products he will actually use. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PNG at manscaped.com. That is 20% off with free shipping at manscaped.com by using the code PNG at checkout. Get him something you'll both enjoy and appreciate. The gift of Manscaped. All right. My final guest for season 4 is a paranormal historian and researcher and a passionate educator and sharer of information, which should come as no surprise as she is also a reference, instruction, and user engagement librarian. She has authored 2 incredible books that definitely belong on the shelf of any student of the paranormal world, Researching the Paranormal and the Encyclopedia of Parapsychology. Courtney M. Block is my guest, and I am so thrilled to be sharing our conversation with you all. Enjoy, folks. My guest today is a librarian at Indiana University Southeast. She is a paranormal historian and the author of Researching the Paranormal and her newest publication, The Encyclopedia of Parapsychology. She also contributes and collaborates with the Feminine Macabre. Please welcome to the show, Ms. Courtney Block.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me and for that introduction. Thank you.
Was that good enough? I did not pre-prepare. I was just like, oh, and go.
No, that was amazing. I'm always like, introductions are always one of those things where I'm like, you know what? I appreciate it when somebody else does it, because it's like that thing when you're asked to like talk about yourself, you're like, oh, good.
Oh, no. Well, I am going to ask you to talk about yourself today. We've got a little bit of time. I'm going to ask you, because you are in a really cool place right now doing a really cool thing. We're going to get to that. But just briefly, if you don't mind, introduce yourself and tell us what you are all about.
Yeah. So like you said, my name's Courtney. I am an academic librarian at Indiana University Southeast. So that's sort of what I feel like is one half of my identity. And the other part is my love of the paranormal and like the mystical and the other and the weird and all things strange. And what I've really been enjoying these past couple of years that has culminated into like my books and my writings is joining those two parts of myself and showing people how they can access all types of information about all types of paranormal things, like, you know, newspaper articles, scholarly articles, historic figures, modern figures. I'm on a random corner.
Are you being accosted right now?
No, it's just Salem is apparently a busy place to be this weekend, so yeah.
Well, you know, Courtney, you are kind of you're my spirit animal because I've been reading up on you, and you do a lot of all the things that I love. You're traveling a lot. You write amazing books, the informing and the teaching on the subject to everyone else, giving them that launch pad to really do the work themselves. And these collaborations, such as with the Feminine Macabre, you're my spirit animal. The end. That was it. What are you doing in Salem?
I am here with a group of contributors to the Feminine Macabre, which is a publication, a yearly publication that Amanda Woomer creates and puts out. And Amanda organized this retreat for contributors to that publication. And we are here in Salem, Massachusetts. Yesterday, we had an overnight investigation at the Lizzie Borden House.
Ooh.
And then today, we're just sort of having a day in Salem.
Oh my gosh! So you investigate hauntings as well. I'm going to add that to my list of why I adore you. So
it was so fun to just be with like-minded folks in a really interesting place. I hate to use the word like fun place, right? Because that's such a tragic history.
Right.
It's been a great weekend to just be with these folks.
That's awesome. Oh, I would love to go to Salem someday.
Someday.
Well, along with the traveling theme here, you were recently at a convention. I believe you were speaking at this convention. Not that long ago. Which one was it, and what were you there to talk about?
Yeah, I was at the Strange Tales of the Midwest conference, and that was in Cape Girardeau, Missouri. And I gave a presentation/workshop on the history of paranormal research, highlighting some of the figures, like historic figures, that investigated, you know, early psychical research, modern figures who continue the work today, And then the workshoppy part of it was I showed people a whole bunch of open, freely open and accessible databases where they can dig into information about all types of strange and anomalous events.
Oh, wow. Wow. Oh, gosh. That would have been amazing to attend. Are you going to do more workshops like that in the future? Are you hoping to?
I'm really hoping to. I'm all about empowering people to know what information is out there and accessible and how to access it.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge is power. I truly believe that. And also just teaching people that there is a really, really long history of people creatively and academically looking into all aspects of the paranormal, because I think a lot of people don't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
But then also too, just showing people, hey, like, you can access like some of this information. You can read these reports from like the Society for Psychical Research. And here's how you can access it. And once you're there, you can access whatever other topics your little heart desires.
You know, I say that, or I have said that quite a few times, knowledge is power. And I am not near the level that you are, but I do my best to try to share not just the information that I relay on the show, but also where I found it. Like all of my source lists for each episode is a mile long, because I want people to see it, you know, arrive at, you know, whatever conclusion they have, you know, or at that information on their own. You know, I want them to, because that's just the best way to learn anyway, is to, you know, do it yourself. Here's a little springboard. There you go. I love that. I love that. Can you talk about, because I think this specific trip, it really contributed to some of your work, if I got that right. Can you talk about your trip to Duke University and what you were doing there?
Oh my goodness. Yes. Oh my goodness. Okay. I still feel like I'm processing that trip.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Duke University at the end of September, first week of October, to visit the parapsychology archives that they have. Duke University was the site of the Duke Parapsychology Lab. Some people know it as the Rhine Parapsychology Lab. And they did experiments on various aspects of psychical topics, like extrasensory perception, psychokinesis, from about the 30s up until the 60s. It's no longer on Duke University, but the Rhine Research Center carries out and continues that work that was started there today.
Okay, so are they still holding like experiments or just looking at parapsychology in the laboratory setting?
Yeah, I know that they put on, lectures. I still think they conduct research. It's much more public facing nowadays. Like, I think that you can even attend, lectures and programs online. Yeah. And so I visited the archives because I specifically wanted to learn more about a few of the figures in the history of that institution. In particular, a librarian, a fellow librarian, and psychical researcher, Rhea White. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to learn more about her and her research and her life.
Okay. And she contributed quite a bit to what they were doing there?
Oh, yes. Yeah. She was involved in a lot of research, in particular, research regarding extrasensory perception in school children.
Ooh.
And was also an editor, I believe, for the Journal of the American Society for Psychical Research, and was also a librarian and
the American Society for Psychical Research. You touched upon something, a subject I have been diving very deeply into, remote viewing and the whole history with that. Did you see any secret, super secret, top secret things that they were doing with Ingo Swann that you could relay to me, to us?
You know, I think that there were some documents in there that I found. So the archive collection is gigantic. And it's really well curated. And what's really interesting is that you have to request like certain boxes 4 days before you even go down there.
Whoa.
Yeah. And so I did not dig into the Ingo Swan stuff, because I, even though I was there for, I think I was at the archive a total of 5 days that week. But I took scans and pictures of everything, and I did come across a few things. I just haven't really gone back and looked at that stuff yet.
Okay. Is this like if just a curious member of the public wanted to do what you did, like is it a thing that's open to the public? Hey, come in, you want to look at the archives, it's fine, request it in advance, blah blah blah. Or did you have special access because of, you work in the university setting, you're a librarian, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I had special access with my affiliation through my university, but I believe that anybody can. I could be wrong, but I know that you can register as a researcher, and even I had to do this, that you can register as a researcher and, explain what it is that you're researching, and they will get in contact with you. So I think that if people are interested, they should definitely go to the Duke University Library website and see what it's all about. Probably a lot of archives are like that, especially bigger collections like these that are they're really, well curated and really monitored.
Yeah. Well, it sounds just very deep and vast collection, kind of overwhelming. You'd want to go in knowing kind of what you're looking for, what subject.
Oh yeah. And I think in general, I mean, the Duke University like parapsychology archives is, I feel like it's such a special collection. Anybody who sh I would encourage anybody to reach out to, their local public library archives, their local university archives. A lot of them you can get access to, especially if, people are maybe they're writing a book or they're working on podcast content or, whatever it is that you're creating. I mean, just reach out to your libraries.
Absolutely. Yes. Good resource, period. There was another trip I wanted to touch on, just ask, because I am from New Orleans. You took a road
Oh.
trip that went through New Orleans, and you took some stunning photographs of the tombs. You went to one of the cemeteries there.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I was there, that was, I won't say it's one of my favorite things to walk through, a grave site, but there's just something so profound, especially those cemeteries down there. I thought for
Right.
a second, I was scrolling through the pics that you'd taken of some of the specific tombs. I thought for a second there was a picture of my ancestors' grave site there.
No way. Yeah.
Yeah, I had to like zoom in and be like, oh, okay, that's not her. But she was
How
buried in,
synchronistic.
I know, right? Yeah. Well, a lot of the tombs, they look alike, and they've been there for years, and they've gotten that same wear and tear that is very specific to the area. A lot of humidity, a lot of wet. But she's buried
Yes.
in the Metairie Cemetery. I don't know if you were able to make it over to that one, but which one specifically did you go to?
I went to the St. Louis Cemetery number 3.
Oh, is that the one that's got I cannot think of the name, the priestess, the high priestess. I'm
No,
confusing it
this
with one.
was there's those are actually that one is tour by like tour only. You have to purchase a ticket, be on a tour, and St. Louis Cemetery 3 was open just to the public, and you could, you didn't have to pay to get in or get a spot on a tour. So yeah, that's why I went to number 3.
Wow. It had me thinking, like, people get so strange about cemeteries. Like I said, I find them beautiful and peaceful, but people get a little weird about them. What are your thoughts as that are going through your mind when you explore them?
Oh gosh, I find them so beautiful, and I think that they're very peaceful. I find them to be very reflective places, very meditative places, also very liminal places. I honestly, the sort of energy that I usually just feel when I visit cemeteries, it's just very peaceful, very meditative, very reflective. I feel like in my own sort of personal practice, if you will, I feel very connected and drawn to ancestor magic and ancestor work. And so I always feel connected to my own sort of sense of magic and wonder when I'm in cemeteries. And I just think they're beautiful. I think they're beautiful memorials of those who have come before and what we will once be. And Yeah.
Good place to reflect. That's a good point, kind of where, you know, life meets death, that even playing field where that can happen. And you can just think back and appreciate, you know, a friend of mine who's also into ancestor, you know, worship and reflection and magic. You know, they every Halloween, they think back and just appreciate the ancestors that came before, that had to come before for them to even be here today. So, all right.
Well, I love that.
Me too. Well, I feel like I'm jumping all over the place, but I know I've only got a little bit of time with you. So I do want to give some time to your books, your writing, your research. So as you were mentioning before, you are a huge supporter of folks doing their own study, their own research into the paranormal. That's been my biggest takeaway from looking at all that you are involved with. Like you said, you know, sharing the historic articles and the stories and your live streams on Instagram. First of all, your energy to do them so consistently is admirable, and I am so jealous.
Well, thank you, because I don't feel consistent, so I'm glad to hear that it comes off as that.
Well, they're just so much fun to watch, so informative. I want to talk about your books, but first, what let people know what all do you talk about on those live streams?
Yeah, thank you. So typically, I talk about like a newspaper article that I found, or a newspaper story about perhaps about some sort of haunting or some sort of case. Typically they are from the late 1800s or early 1900s. And I love reading them, because quite often like the language that they spoke with back then is, you know, much more lyrical. It's much more sort of flowery and over the top. And so that's just kind of fun and entertaining. And also too, it just sort of brings back to life these names and people and events that, you know, are otherwise long gone, you know, to memory. So I find, I'm remembering like one article that I read about some people who described like a phantom on like the railroad and their experience with that. And so they're usually a little whimsical, usually a little fun.
You know, as I was watching through, you have such an insightful, passionate way of viewing and relaying info about this field and the stories that you share. And I felt like it doesn't make people feel odd or weird for being interested or liking it, but you know, rather included. Have you considered doing like a regular broadcast, like a radio show or a podcast? Because you know, we need more voices like yours.
Well, first of all, that means so much. It truly does, because I there are more people having lots of fun across the street here.
Have them join in. I'm sure they've got some insight to give as well.
Right. But yeah, I really appreciate that, because one of the things that I really wanted to relay to people, and that really inspired me to write the books that I wrote, is that I want people to know that you're not, you know, abnormal or weird for having an interest in the paranormal, and that, you know, your curiosity is valid and you have you have, you know, the power to locate these resources, and they're out there. And so that means a lot to me. And I, to answer your question, I have toyed with some notions. I've toyed with the notion, but sometimes I'm sort of, probably like a lot of us are stuck in that, that sort of, you know, social media time suck where it's like, okay, how much time does this, you know, take, or take combined, you know, with the sort of imposter syndrome that social media can so often, like, you know, trigger within us. But yes, I have considered what might be next.
Good to hear. I am glad to hear it. And I'll be looking out for that. One other thing, I just caught one, the last thing I watched. What is WUFO Wednesday? Did I say that right?
Oh my gosh. Yes. Oh my goodness. Okay. I'm so glad you asked me, because it has to do with some of my favorite people. So WUFO Wednesday stands for UFO Watch Wednesday. Mm-hmm. And it was started by the folks at Liminal Earth. So Jeremy, Garrett, and Bex with Liminal Earth. And basically they were inspired by an astrologer, Madeline Kelly, who pointed out that in the work of John Keel, that John Keel had pointed out that a lot of the UFO incidents that he had spoken to people about and documented seemed to take place at 10 p.m. on Wednesday nights. And so they started this sort of just social event, social hangout, where every Wednesday at 10 p.m. your local time, you just kind of pay attention, and maybe that means you go outside and look around and see if anything weird happens. Maybe you just kind of see if anything weird in general happens to you at that time. And then they encourage you to use the hashtag WUFO to talk about it, to join their live streams that they do talking about various weird things and having guests on. And they're such creative weirdos. And I just can't say enough good things about them.
Oh, that's so awesome. Fascinating. Have you seen anything?
I have not.
You're still looking. That's okay.
I'm still looking to the skies. Yeah. But I will tell you something funny that did happen to me on a Wednesday at 10 p.m. Mm-hmm. A number of months ago, when I was still finishing my second book, I would quite often I would stay late at my library to just keep writing. Mm-hmm. I would just stay in my office. And so one Wednesday I was leaving at 10 o'clock. The library had already been closed for a couple of hours. And as I was walking out, a member of the university police was coming in to just do their nightly rounds of all the buildings. And we sort of startled each other because they were walking in as I was walking out. And, you know, dark, empty libraries are very spooky places. And so I introduced myself and we got to talking for a little bit. And the officer told me that her name was Ariel. And I was like, oh, okay. And I didn't really think anything about it until I got home and I tuned into the Liminal Earth live stream that, you know, was commemorating WUFO. And they were like, okay, does anybody have any experiences with aerial entities?
Oh.
And I was like, hang on. At basically exactly 10 o'clock tonight, I literally met an aerial entity.
And how random is that name, too? It's
I know,
not a popular
right?
name. Oh, so synchronistic.
I know. I just love it.
Tell me there isn't something going on. Come on.
Right. And, like, I just love the whimsy of that mm-hmm. moment. And it's like, it doesn't have to mean anything more than just a fun, it was just a fun, interesting moment, a little magical moment.
Yeah.
And we can just appreciate it for that. You know, I think sometimes people, and I think it sometimes happens to all of us, you know, can get sort of obsessed with, like, what does it mean? And it's like, to me, it's just sort of like that night, it was just the universe being like, hey, here's a little bit of fun.
Yeah. You know, just consider it just a little nudge, just a quiet reminder that, you know, there's more going on. And, don't take it too seriously. But also, you know, it could have been something, which I think a lot of people struggle with, a lot of people that are more on the skeptical end, like I have been, is that the things that do happen are oftentimes so subtle that, you know, like, for instance, like the situation you had with the officer coming through, like, you know, if you hadn't been paying attention, it wouldn't have really set off any alarm bells or anything later. It would have just been an encounter.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I think that the magic of that moment was really connected to, like, logging onto and watching the liminal earth people and connecting with that community. Because if I hadn't logged in, and watched, I never would have heard them say the phrase aerial entity and been reminded. And so to me, it's almost kind of like if I had to put any meaning to that moment, I think it would just be a confirmation that, you know, taking part in the weirdo community is the path, you know, like it's a good thing.
Yeah, I agree. I absolutely agree with you. All right. Let's talk about your books. Researching the Paranormal. This was your first book published in 2020. What's it about?
Oh my goodness. So yeah, Researching the Paranormal is all about highlighting the history of scholarly inquiry into the paranormal. So it highlights the work of people basically from the mid to late 1800s and the work that was started at that point and then continues today. And it's a sort of introduction to that topic that highlights the very long history, but the majority of the book is a big annotated bibliography of books, databases, museums, libraries, journal articles, journals where people can find resources on. I broke it down into some categories like, you know, near-death experiences, parapsychology, ghost hauntings, which arguably can all sort of be lumped together and are connected to one another, cryptozoology, astrology, all sorts of things.
Okay. So it's literally a fantastic resource for somebody who wants to research the paranormal. Start there.
Yes. It's a giant annotated bibliography. I basically just go sort of topic by topic and say, hey, if you're interested in parapsychology, here's a big list of books. Here's a big list of journal articles. Here's a big list of, you know, journals to look at to just help people jumpstart. Like, and I hope that what people will do is I hope that the book will inspire them to continue their own research and be inspired by the things that they come across.
Right. Well, how did a book like this come to be for you? Like, what was really the inspiration? Was there like an original event, something like that?
Oh my gosh, I love this question. okay, so at the end of 2018, I was just in sort of a burnout phase, just personally and professionally. And I remember seeing an email come across a listserv. And it was from my eventual publisher, who said that they were accepting proposals for their next round of reference books.
Mm-hmm.
And I just remember thinking to myself, like, how great would it be to combine my skills as a librarian and my interest in the paranormal and create this book about resources for the paranormal? And I sent the proposal almost like flippantly. Like, I was not expecting them to bite. I was just like, they're just gonna think I'm a weirdo, like, whatever, but sure, here's my idea, blah blah blah. And they emailed me back and they were like, tell us more.
Wow.
And that is the story of how I wrote my first book.
Yeah, because, oh, wow. And then you kind of, you had to, you know? Even if you sent it off flippantly, they're like, yes. You're like, oh, okay.
Right? I was like, what have I done? But I think that it really, I like to just be authentic in telling that story because it has taught me really just like shoot your shot.
Yeah.
And lean, also it's taught me to like lean into my weirdness, and I want other people to know that that's how it happened, and hopefully it inspires someone else to shoot their shot one day.
You know, like a resource guide like that, where you are, there's no gatekeeping whatsoever of this information. You want others to know it just as much, if not more, than you do. That's not common, I gotta say. How do you look at that in this world, when you see it happening, you know, other groups or authors or whatever? They give you just enough information to be entertained, but not to really educate and to give you, you know, teach you how to fish, so to speak. Like, how do you look at that whole aspect of this world?
Gosh, right?
That might be a big question. Sorry.
No, it's okay. It's an important question. I think that a lot of it is really, for me, rooted in just like my ethos as a librarian. The profession, as you can imagine, is very much, you know, anti-gatekeeping and very, very much all about empowering people to get the skills that they need to do their own research. And so, yeah, it is frustrating when I see people gatekeeping for gatekeeping's sake.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, like, there might be some reasons why you don't perhaps like reveal everything or whatever. I don't know. It's frustrating.
Yeah.
And I think that I like to tell people that, you know, I'm not the first librarian to talk about these types of things. I'm not the first librarian to even be publishing the types of things that I publish. And that's a good thing. Because I think so often there's like this attitude of like having to be the first, having to be, you know, original all the time, you know, and obviously you don't want to like, you know, steal people's ideas or whatever, but it's like, I want to hear your take on something, even though it's a topic that so many people talk about and that people have talked about for years. Nobody's gonna do it like you do it. Nobody's gonna put the spin on it like you do.
Yeah.
Nobody's gonna have the perspective and the life experience that you have. So I want to hear. I want to hear you.
Yeah.
And just because you're not the first to talk about a certain topic, or just because it's perhaps not, you know, you're not the first person to ever do a podcast, doesn't mean that your creations are not worthy.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and the unique take, any new unique take is so special in this world. Like one of my favorite things is to hear a theory that I've never heard before and be like, oh,
yeah,
I never thought of it that way. And it takes everyone to do that. Everyone's different, unique brains to do that. So
it's
awesome.
It's like, I never thought about it that way.
Yeah.
But because we're all sort of, you know, giving each other a space at the table, now I am thinking about it that way. And perhaps it's inspiring me to keep thinking about something, or, you know, because like, that's the thing, we're all constantly inspired every day by the things that we read, the things that we watch, the people that we talk to, our life experiences. I mean, nobody's siloed completely and influenced by nothing.
Right. Well,
that's my soapbox.
Stay up there. we gotta talk about the other one. So researching the paranormal is, you know, it's a big book as far as like the amount of information that you are including in there. And then you went and wrote an encyclopedia of parapsychology. This is a real reference guide and resource. It's a behemoth amount of information. It's the size of a textbook. I saw you in the video. You're holding it up. It's like 400 pages or something like that. When you started, did you think it was going to end up that way? Did you think it was going to be that much?
I didn't exactly know what to think. I did not realize that it was going to be the size that it was. I mean, I think it's like, you know, bigger than 8.5 by 11. I mean, it's like a coffee table textbook size.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that I did have a pretty good idea of the length of it and the content of it, just based on the proposal and the detail that I had to sort of work through with my publisher. But yeah, it like the writing process always sort of shifts and takes on a different life of its own and surprises you. And yeah.
Okay. Oh, what kind of information will people find inside?
So in the Encyclopedia of Parapsychology, people will find information, biographical sketches about historical figures from the mid-1800s onward, and those are figures who are not just in the United States. I really wanted to be intentional about including people from, you know, international figures, including women, and people who often get overlooked in favor of some of the prominent British and American researchers in the history. But those people are also included because they're important parts of the history of the field. There are also biographical sketches of modern researchers who are continuing the work today. There is also an annotated bibliography that goes decade by decade from the 1870s through the 2020s.
Oh, wow.
yeah, where I give a sampling of some of the research that has been done in each of those decades. So you can look up those citations and read the summary and then find them for yourselves. There's also a glossary of terminology, so you can get familiar with the terms used in parapsychological research. And there are a number of appendices that talk about some of the journals that you can look up, some of the international research parapsychological research organizations, and there are even some quick start bibliographies if you're just like, I'm not really sure where to start. Just give me like some 5 resources that jumpstart looking into ghosts, or
right,
looking into ESP.
You know, you mentioned it a couple of times, just like that goes into both of these books. You started or centered around the mid-1800s. Are you of the opinion that, like, you know, that the spiritualism movement was a big catalyst for where we are now, where the field has gone?
Yeah, I do think so. So you do definitely find people who were interested in looking into these topics prior to the mid-1800s. I mean, you got Franz Mesmer, who was in the 1700s, where we get our notion today of mesmerism and then subsequently hypnotism. But what I think really happened with the spiritualism era is that it piqued researchers' interest in wondering if there was anything to this notion of life and consciousness beyond death. And so I really think that the field of parapsychological research would have looked quite a bit different if it weren't for the spiritualism era.
Okay. And a final bit on the encyclopedia, and then we'll run up to closing it out here in just a moment. So Lloyd Arbuck gave you a pretty nice recommendation, high praise on the back of the book, recommending it to anyone interested in just having that starting place researching parapsychology in this field. Who would you most recommend get this book?
Oh, gosh.
Who's going to benefit the most?
I love this question. I think that the people who will get the most benefit out of it are those who are either completely new to the topic and just they're just like, what is this? I want to know more. Or people who know a little bit about it and they want to know even more. And people who perhaps are wanting to get, you know, a little bit dive in just a little bit deeper and be like, okay, I want to kickstart or renew my research that I've done and see what else is out there. Because even though my book is nearly 400 pages, it still just represents a drop in the bucket of the information that is out there on this topic.
I mean, it's a big old reference resource guide, great place to start. But yeah, you ain't kidding. This field seems to grow every day. You know, every day I learn something new I've never heard before.
Absolutely.
And a whole new rabbit hole to climb down.
Yeah, I mean, and that's just, you know, the value and the importance of you know, research and inquiry and people writing about their, you know, thoughts and research, and it's the literature is going to continue to grow as it as it should, as it does.
Right. A new edition in the near future, maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
All right, Courtney. We are at our final segment here. I got a couple of rapid fire questions for you.
Okay.
First question, what does the paranormal mean to you?
Oh, this is such a good question. Okay. What does the paranormal mean to me? Oh my gosh. Okay. I think a couple of things. Okay. The paranormal to me means a celebration of the other. And also too, the paranormal to me, it represents open-minded curiosity. And it feels very familiar. It's a comfortable place because it accepts and welcomes that question of what if.
Ooh, I love that. All right. All right. Who is your idol in this field?
Oh, my gosh, my idol. Woo. Oh, my gosh. Okay. I feel like I have so many.
Oh, no.
Okay. So let me touch on a little bit. So one of my idols is the folks, oh, just the sounds of Salem in the background there.
Ambiance.
Right. So, definitely I think, one of my idols would be, Rhea White, the librarian and parapsychological researcher who I, wanted to learn more about when I visited Duke University. So many of the other, female figures throughout the history of the field, including, you know, Eleanor Sidgwick, and just Louisa Rhine, so many others that are just like almost too many to list, but I include in my book. And honestly, just, I put this in my acknowledgments, but I'll sort of use this as a catch-all. I could not have written my book without the community of supportive people that like surround me. That includes, you know, people in the weirdo community that I've gotten to know and who have supported me, you know, like the folks at Liminal Earth and just so many others that just have been cheerleaders and who have been supportive and who have been excited to see what's going on, who have offered feedback. I mean, I don't know. I know that probably sounds like a non-answer, but
No, you know what? It's a tough question to answer. I know that because I've been asked that. It's a tough question to answer. Yeah, because you can have a different idol for all different aspects of it as well.
Yeah.
I think you did well. That was,
Thanks.
I accept that answer.
Great. Thank you.
All right. What has been the most convincing aspect or piece of research that you have come across?
Oh, all right. I think that some of the near-death research that is out there is so convincing and just so, it's just wild. Mm-hmm. Like reports of people who, you know, can report back what people were saying, what was located, you know, like high up on shelves that they never could have seen in their operating room or the ER. Mm-hmm. I am convinced, and I think many other researchers are, that, I mean, we have proven that consciousness in some form mm-hmm. exists beyond physical bodily death.
Right.
And I just think that statement is just, it almost boggles my mind. It's almost too much to even wrap your head around.
It is. It is.
It's almost too much.
Yeah, I would absolutely, hands down, agree with you. The research that has been done and the stories that have come back from, you know, the near-death experience mm-hmm. and those, you know, the shared death experience and out-of-body
yeah.
consciousness existing outside
yes.
of the body and the things that happen that are impossible. And you just have to kind of extend that, you know, your disbelief to mm-hmm. to understand that it is possible. We just don't know how yet. And it always seems like, you know, science is moving the goalpost as far as
yes.
what is and is not possible and what is and is not acceptable, you know.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So it's a big old subject, a lot to wrap your brain around. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. One final question for you. This will be a fun one. What is a fact about you most people would be surprised to learn?
Oh, okay. Wow. Oh my God. That people would be surprised?
Or maybe just most people don't know.
That most people don't know. It. I don't know if this is like shocking or controversial, but I hate birthday cake. I hate it.
Oh, no. Okay.
I don't like it.
Okay.
That's the first thing that came to my mind.
Hey, you know, super controversial.
I mean,
super controversial. We're talking about it on my TikTok live tonight. I mean, you know, it's a debate.
Oh God, I feel like when you're a weirdo and you're out as a weirdo, it's like the weird thing about me is that I just fucking hate birthday cake.
All right.
You know, like our weird things are probably like pretty innocuous to most people.
Well, librarian, paranormal historian, author, and birthday cake hater. Where can my audience find and follow you? And where can they get copies of Researching the Paranormal and Encyclopedia of Parapsychology?
Oh, I am most active on Instagram at the moment. And people can find me there at liminal.librarian. And to get a copy of my book, I always love to start by telling people to ask their library to get a copy for them. I think a lot of people forget that you can do that, and it saves you money. And if people, you know, want to get a personal copy, they can go to my publisher at roman.com. That's roman.com. And just search my name and use the discount code RLFNF3030 to get 30% off. The sound of children singing in the background, I hope, was really creepy.
It does sound like a birthday party happening in the background.
Oh,
so
gosh.
Watch
I hope
out.
There's no cake. I know. God. But yeah, go to if people want to own a copy. Go to my publisher and use that discount code to get you 30% off, because it gets you 30% off of the physical books, but it also gets you 30% off of the ebooks as well.
Wonderful. All right. Yeah. And, to close us out, would you like to leave us with any final thoughts, advice, or words of wisdom?
Oh my gosh. Yes. I always love to remind people that your curiosity is valid. And you don't need to qualify your curiosity. Just being interested is good enough.
Courtney Block, thank you so much for joining me today, and thank you so much for your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you once again to Courtney Block. Knowledge truly is power, dudes, and she's doing an outstanding and admirable job of sharing the gift of knowledge and showing how anyone who craves the education and the know-how can have access to that. It was truly a privilege being able to speak with her, and I can't wait to have her back on. If you enjoyed this episode, please rate and review. It's one of the easiest ways you can show support to the shows you love. It brings new listeners and even more outstanding guests to the conversation, and that's exactly what I'd like to do for you guys in the new season. Another very easy way to show your support is to please double check that you are in fact subscribed wherever you are listening with the episode set to download. I recently had to have this conversation with a sibling of mine who was just popping over to Apple and searching my show every time she wanted to listen to the new episode, and she just didn't realize the importance that listener download number plays in the whole scope of things. So just wanted to make mention of that while it was on my mind. We have one episode remaining before we bring yet another season to a close on our season finale. Next week, we're getting skeptical, and then we're getting conclusive, where I'll be announcing our next subject and announcing my winners of this season's oh-so-exclusive and coveted PGP Awards. Not so exclusive and coveted, but a lot of fun to look back and celebrate the subject, the things we've learned, and the people we've met along the way. That's a wrap for now. See you guys next week. Stay safe, keep the nightlight on, and sleep with one eye open.